Travolta's decision to play a woman in Hairspray has raised eyebrows among some Scientology watchers. The actor will reportedly dress in drag to take on the role of middle-aged mom Edna Turnblad in the high-camp John Waters film, a part made famous by the notorious cross-dresser Divine. Edna was later played on Broadway by outspoken gay activist Harvey Fierstein. A recent Rolling Stones article about Scientology reports that its founder, L. Ron Hubbard, felt that gays should be taken from society as rapidly as possible because no social order will survive which does not remove these people from its midst.
And well said. Well said.
This is the Hellbound Alley program. I'm Alley, and with me, as always, is Francois.
Oh, yeah. That's me.
And so, yes, Scientology is anti-gay, even though they are recently claiming that L. Ron Hubbard's words have been taken out of context, which is laughable.
Yeah, always the same little ring-a-mole.
They're saying it's from anti-Scientology people,
everything
which in
you
actuality,
don't like.
It's all from Scientology literature.
Everything you don't like is taken out of context. It's always the same thing.
It can't be more clear. I mean, if you're a homosexual, you're like a 2 on the tone scale, and the tone scale has
to do with...
No,
it's not 2. It's actually 1.1, which is covert hostility.
Right. What's the tone scale? Can you tell them?
Oh, it's kind of complicated. It's basically a way to classify where a person is at a given moment. In terms of
in their growth.
Mood and intentions, yeah.
In their actualization.
Or but it can change from moment to moment depending on the conversation.
And you can't be a homosexual and be higher than a 1.1 because
Right. Being
a homosexual in itself is a weakness. And, of course, Hubbard said that homosexuals should be driven out of Scientology.
Because being homosexual means that you will always be... duplicitous.
Right, which, that's, you know, the idea...
You're always covertly hostile to other people.
Of course, Scientology should change that, considering the fact that homosexuality isn't something you have to hide anymore. But it's kind of interesting, because it speaks to the notion that Scientology celebrities, like Travolta, aren't given Scientology the way most lay people are given Scientology. So Travolta might think it's okay to do this cross-dressing thing, which is actually drag. Divine wasn't a cross-dresser. Divine was a drag queen. Just want to keep those terms correct. Cross-dressers are like straight guys who get off on wearing women's clothing. That wasn't what Divine was. Divine was a female impersonator. So anyway, I did want to mention, it's kind of interesting, they talked about Harvey Fierstein being playing Edna Turnblad. When they did the auditions for Hairspray on Broadway, they came to my theater where I worked, and I got to see Fierstein and the person who played Tracy come in and go to their rehearsals, and I was kind of standing there with my mouth dropped open. I'm like, Fierstein, and I remember he said something like, I'm sorry, I can't remember. It was a Fierstein moment that is lost from my memory forever, but it was magical. I'd like
indeed
to hear what he'd say about this whole thing with Travolta. I'm sure whatever he'd say would be terribly witty.
By the way, congratulations to Scientology for winning Best Picture.
That's right.
Because the director of Crash, Paul Haggis, is a Scientologist.
Yes, that should add to a lot of the derision, because I've read a lot of bad stuff about Crash. I can't really speak to it because I didn't see the movie.
Well, but Brian,
but if it was directed in part written by a Scientologist, that can't be good.
Well, Brian Nelly said that he didn't really think it was an upset that Crash won over Brokeback Mountain, because he said those were two equally unworthy movies. They were the worst possible choices anyway, so.
Who knows? I watched the Oscars, but I haven't watched any of those movies, so what should I know, you know? You watch the Oscars to see somebody make a fool of themselves.
No, you don't watch the Oscars.
I do. You better believe I do, and I do notice the dresses. I can't help it. I keep on thinking of what structure must be underneath those gowns to keep those women in them.
So boring.
I don't know. Yeah, hypocrisy and stupidness and idiocy. I guess that's what makes it entertaining for me. And I thought it was really funny to watch Stewart make fun of the Oscars and see the people in the audience completely not find it funny.
Right.
What can you expect? So what's next? Government handouts to churches.
Well, the Department of Homeland Security is, thanks to George Bush, who issued an executive order. And who said the times of kings was over? But he just issued an executive order, so there it is. And now the Department of Homeland Security has a Center for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, which includes reimbursing churches that provide disaster assistance.
Yeah. So what does the Department of Homeland Security have to do with giving money to religious organizations? Is it just another...
It's an executive order. You don't question.
Basically, to me, it sounds like a great big...
It's what the king said.
It's a great big garbage dump for your money, America.
But it's an executive order, so... it's what the king said, so just do it.
I noticed...
Really,
because we were looking at this from Jaywalk Blog, and somebody talked about how great the religious organizations did with Hurricane Katrina. And, they really did, especially when they refused water to people who needed it because it was from Budweiser. And it kind of makes you think, is it the churches that were helping people in Katrina, or was it, you know, corporations like Anheuser-Busch who tried to give water to people and sent out all kinds of stuff? Mm-hmm. And the churches get the credit until they try to... you know, express their values by refusing water to thirsty people. That's really great. Yeah, the religious organizations did a great job.
And, of course, someone from America Blog, which sounds terrible, asked why we're reimbursing religious organizations, which donors already get tax deductions, you know, when they give to the churches in the first place.
Right, the government's already paying
and
for
the
that.
Churches raise the money from their supporter to do the work to begin with. So, it's just a cash grab. And it'll mean worse disaster relief than before.
But it has to
As
do
anything
with...
government does, it only makes everything worse.
It somehow has to do with Homeland Security. How?
Because the president said so.
Well, if the president said so, I'm sure all you guys agree, right?
Well, it's an executive order, so you can't question it.
I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of executive orders before his term is up. Because it seems to me that even though there's a couple more years left, it's going to be another year of throw the bums out of office.
I think that there should be an executive order saying that Christianity is the official religion of the United States.
Well, haven't they already done that in, what was it, Missouri?
I don't know. But, you know, they should just come out and say it because it's ridiculous. They should just come out and say it. We're in charge because they are.
No, they don't want to say that.
I know they don't. That's why I'm saying that.
They have a reason to say that, not say that. Because
I know. It's not profitable to say that you're in control.
It's better to make people think you're persecuted.
I know.
Because as we know, Christianities are terribly persecuted in America, and someone should do something about it, like give them lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what Jesus would have wanted.
Yeah.
After all, the poor will always be there, but you won't always have me.
For a thick
that's democracy. Our little Bible lesson for the day.
Mm-hmm. Protect our democracy in peril.
So, anyway, if you want to come to our website, you should come to our website. It's at hellboundalley.com. And you can email us at allie@hellboundalley.com. And you can also listen to us on freethoughtradio.com. You just go to the website and look at the schedule. And also, we do have a live show, and it's less formal than this one, if you can call this formal. But go to freethoughtradio.com, or just simply go to our website at hellboundalley.com/live to find out how to listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And we do have a chat room, and you can call in and all that good stuff.
Well, on this show, we just kind of go on tangents, but I don't think it's not formal. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what's a formal show supposed to be like. Are we supposed to, like, ask a question and answer it and ask another question?
Yes, we have to be
really
dry. I
have never seen such a thing. I mean, what do people mean by formal show?
Okay, well,
it's strange.
I can tell you a formal show is like Point of Inquiry, where it sounds a lot like public radio. It's kind of dry.
You mean
not
like,
to make fun of them or anything.
You mean like a pre-scripted show?
Yeah, it sounds pretty, you know, put together. And I mean,
this show sounds put together.
I think we are. I mean, Point of Inquiry is okay. They interview, like, Richard Dawkins and stuff like that, but that's what I would call, like, a formal show. It sounds like it was produced in a studio.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's just, I'm not sure how we would do that. I mean.
Well, okay, so how would you say that the live show is different than this one?
Because it's,
live.
Yeah. You know, there's more interaction.
Well, the one big difference between our live show and this one is that our live show, we get to show you our collection of really strange outsider music.
Yeah. It's just more, it's just on this show we talk about perhaps more, conceptual topics. Well, on the live show, we talk about the news, we interview people, stuff like that.
Yep. Okay. So what are we going to talk about on this show?
The hypocrisy of vegetarianism.
What?
Yeah, I'm sure that there are some people who are going to email us saying, you don't understand, vegetarianism is just a diet.
And yeah, it would be a great opportunity blah, blah, blah. To take our banner off your site.
Yeah, and not support you.
Yeah.
And this is one of those controversial shows. But,
actually, you know, among the atheists I know who we talk to, I don't know many vegetarians. There's usually one or two that really have a lot to say that come up in our message boards and such, so this show's for you.
So why are we talking against vegetarianism? Well, in the first place, if it's just a diet for you because you have medical, you know, problems, or you just don't like meat, I don't know if that's possible, I suppose it is.
Sure.
That's fine. That's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about the whole outgrowth of vegetarianism as one plank of the greenie platform.
Right, it's vegetarianism.
Right.
When somebody doesn't like meat or they can't eat meat, it's not vegetarianism.
Mm-hmm.
It's just somebody's diet.
Right. talking about also veganism and fruitarianism and all that.
Right, there are claims being made, very specific claims, mm-hmm. and I think we treat this the same as we treat any pseudoscience. And as we know, diets are, you know, like 60-65% of all pseudoscience you can find out there, really. I mean, if you go to Quackwatch,
but yeah.
A lot of it is about nutrition, eating, and the global implications, etc. I mean, think about the big diet quacks out there. I mean, we've got Kevin Trudeau. I mean, he talks about cures, but he's big on freaky diets. I mean, he used to advertise Atkins, but he's on to bigger and better things. But
And of course, as any good belief system, vegetarianism has its enemy, and they have the derogative term for what we do. It's SAD, which means standard American diet, which means a guy who goes to a Burger King and stuffs himself with hamburgers every day.
I know, it's like this notion that
chips.
Standard American diet is a burger, fries, and a shake.
Sprawls on the couch and watches TV all day.
Again, what people are talking, I don't know this world. This is not a world I am part of. Like, oh, those Americans, and they eat the burgers and the fries, you know, or Canadians, they eat the fries and the gravy. It's just not my world.
It's not necessarily American, it's just the American term. I don't know what the Canadian term is.
And of course it's the fault of corporations.
It doesn't quite work if you say SC.
It's the fault of petroleum industry for making the cars and making the roads and then causing a drive-in restaurants to happen in the 50s. See the connection? It's a big conspiracy.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy. And I know this is more facetious, but according to a prisoner, vegetarianism is also a religion.
A prisoner?
Yeah. Eric McDavid, one of the alleged Earth Liberation Front eco-terrorists.
Oh, he's a political prisoner.
No, he's an eco-terrorist.
Yeah, he's a terrorist.
Has claimed the First Amendment right to a vegan diet while he awaits trial in jail. He said that his vegan diet is based upon his strongly, sincerely, and firmly held beliefs, which are the same as a religious belief, which of course are about animal rights, rights of all life, etc. The same thing that vegetarians say. So
I'm just imagining.
I'm not saying that it's actually a religion.
I'm sure Americans would be thrilled to hire chefs that can cook meat in egg-free dishes for the vegetarians. Meat, milk, and egg-free diets.
And of course, And of course, there's the other little problem that vegetarianism is also, the ideology of vegetarianism goes against most religions, which is not a bad thing in itself. But as you know, most monotheistic religions say that man is not equal to other species, that man is
has dominion
superior
over,
caretaker of other species. And even the Hindu, who have bad karma prohibition against killing most animals, Hindu law expressly permits eating meat, and vegetarians also do not talk against Buddhism, although many Buddhists, including the Dalai Lama, eat meat.
Yeah.
So apparently you're not a killer if you're in an Eastern religion, because you're more wise. You're wiser. You're a wiser person.
I mean, I suppose they...
Sad American.
They should be more specific and say we support Jainism or whatever. Jainism. That reminds me, there's this great television commercial for Kleenex. It's like an antibacterial, which is dumb, but anyway, it's a cool commercial where this Jainist Buddhist guy, or I guess he's just a Jainist, is walking along, sweeping his way so he doesn't step on any animals, and he picks up the spider with a piece of rice paper, and he puts it on the leaf, and he moves the turtle, you know, and he's walking along, and he sneezes into an antibacterial tissue and realizes that it kills 99.9% of the germs. And he's like, oh, shit.
It's a great ad. And, of course, the Jewish religion says that you can eat meat as long as it's kosher.
Mm-hmm.
And they're against that, too. They're against that, too. If you look at PETA, they're against pretty much everyone, so I guess. Except if you're from an Eastern religion, or if you're a minority.
Of course, we're talking about PETA. We're not talking about people for the eating of tasty animals.
Mm, I like that organization. I like that one. Definitely. Definitely. Like you said, it's not about diet, because what's a diet? A diet is just what we eat.
I mean, do you suppose PETA should be a little bit more mad at the third world country people who fry, you know, bugs and stuff and sell them at the market?
Definitely.
I mean,
definitely.
They should be against killing insects, shouldn't they? I mean, they eat all kinds of bugs, grubs and scorpions and ants and all that.
Definitely.
Of course, you'd have to talk to one to know exactly what their position on killing bugs is. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, if you can't kill bugs, then why do you get to kill smaller things and smaller things still? Like microorganisms, like bacteria and viruses.
Exactly. But they can't feel pain.
How do they know that? They're the ones that always ask that question.
Mm. So what are the arguments, reasons to be a vegetarian? Well, I think the main argument is the ick argument.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the same argument used against abortion, some medical treatments, sexual practices. It's just ick. I don't like it because, you know, slaughterhouses are terrible and, it's awful, and look at these images.
Yeah. They mistreat the chicken, so you should boycott Kentucky Fried Chicken. And
so, of course, if we go by that argument, then anything, I guess we should kill people who are ugly or deformed. I guess we should stop doing surgery because it's not pretty.
I see what you mean.
We should, I'm telling you, we should stop a lot of vegetarian stuff like tofu, because I don't think it's very pretty. I would put that as an example of vegetarian crime against humanity, some meals with tofu.
Actually, in a way, sex itself is a pretty ugly thing. I mean, obviously, you're talking about how predation is an ugly thing.
Right, it's There's a lot of nature.
It's like, I'm wondering how they plan on getting animals to stop predation.
Well, that actually is part of the second reason, which is animal rights. Now, they say animals have rights too. Okay. Well, the most fundamental right is the right of life, correct? That you have the right to own yourself and to the desire to stay alive. Okay, so your first right is you shouldn't be killed, you know? It's a pretty basic, that's the kind of the most fundamental one. If you don't have that, then how can you have any other? If you don't own yourself, how can you have any other right? So the first thing that has to go is predation, because predation becomes murder now.
You know, on
predation is murder. So now how are we going to enforce this?
Right, on the Penn show, Penn Jillette show, he was talking about how he didn't believe that in animal rights, because with rights come responsibilities, and if you give animals the same rights as humans, then the animals are all going to end up on death row. I guess it's kind of a facetious argument, but
so
animals can't be given the same responsibilities as far as, like, you can't kill other people, because that's what animals do.
So what I guess it comes back is we can kill all the animals anyway because they're murderers.
Right. We have to be able to kill other people for all the reasons that animals kill each other. And
exactly.
Animals do not kill each other just to eat them. If you look at, like, the lion family, the animals kill each other to ensure their genes go on rather than their rivals' genes. So that's why a lion would kill the cubs of his new mate's other sire, you know, like. And, of course, it's not, people don't step in and make that stop happening, because we know that that's what lions do. It's sad and kind of brutal, but that's what lions do, and that's what a lot of other animals do.
No, we should stop it, because lion cubs have rights.
Exactly. I mean, how do you stop chimpanzee? If you believe that no animals should be pets, we didn't mention that part of PETA.
Well, this is not really about PETA, though.
Well, if you believe no animals should be pets, though, I mean, they would all be in the wild, and how are they supposed to live without predation? Chimpanzees are going to stop ripping the heads off of baby baboons?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to go to the store? Are they going to get jobs so that they can buy food?
It's absolutely.
Are they
going to
grow their own? There are a few animals that can farm, and I think some ants can do it, but that's about it. How are you going to make those animals vegetarians?
But of course, what they really mean is animals should have rights to be protected from humans, not from other animals.
Right.
So basically, it's not animal rights at all. Animal rights have nothing to do with it. It's about human anti-value. It's about stopping people from doing things. It's not about animal rights at all. It's just about being anti-human. And of course, it's one criticism that greenies in general hate. When we tell them that they believe that other species are more important.
Because they're part of nature and we're not, right?
Exactly. And then that's all part of the original sin idea.
Yeah, it's a very religious idea, the way that they separate humans from the rest of the
human of the beings world. Are inherently degraded because of progress.
Then even if they're not Christians, they still are stuck. They're still sort of enslaved by this Christian idea of the Garden of Eden, really.
No, I don't think it's a Christian idea per se. I just think it's a mimetic necessity. If you're going to make people believe in stupid ideology like vegetarianism or greenie or Christianity or government or whatever belief system, you have to create an imaginary need that you can fulfill.
Well, let me pretend that I'm on their side, and they would say, so if you don't think that humans are inherently different from the rest of nature, then how come you can't make it so that animals have the same rights as humans?
But what?
I said,
I don't see the relation.
Because if animals and humans are the same, then why shouldn't you treat them all the same?
I'm not saying they're the same. You asking that to them?
No, that's what they would say, because we were talking about, they're the ones that also believe that humans and animals have an inherent separation.
No, I think that there's an inherent moral separation, because we have values and they can't.
Right, it's our brains that make us different.
But I'm not saying that we're any different, we're all animals.
Yeah.
The only difference is, you know, we have our own, we have our own social structures. And then other animals, you know, have their own, but human beings are able to have values and goals and are able to conceptualize and have these kind of decision choices. So that's why morality, you know, is a human topic.
Exactly.
Philosophy is a human topic.
Well, I mean, there are animals that have sort of a rudimentary sort of social structure that you could kind of call a morality, like,
Sure, but it's not, it does not interface with humanity.
I mean, you can draw some parallels between...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that there's no interface between that kind of social organization and ours. It's not like, say, the Amish. Like, they have their own community, whatever, society, but they also, like, sell us chairs or whatever. It's not, they're right. Not like the Amish.
No, I mean...
You know what I'm talking about?
I guess I'm trying to be tough here, but, like, if you want to say that morality is objective and there's universal morality, then how can you separate ape morality from human morality?
I'm not the one separating it, though. It's just a fact of nature.
Uh-huh.
You know, they just don't have the brain capacity necessary to go that far. Sure, they have social structures, but there's no interface between those structures and ours. It's like I said, if you have an Amish community, there's still some interface because they'll sell us chairs or whatever.
It's more than just they'll sell
or
us chairs.
Or raise barns.
They're human beings that do come into the community. They're children. Leave the community when they're 16 and they go around and...
Yeah, but all I'm saying is the apes aren't going to sell us furniture.
Right. Or sell us drugs like the Amish children.
I mean, they can't even communicate. They can't even communicate. So, it's kind of a basic problem there if you're going to try to... Anyway, we have to go to the intermission. So, why Christians should be vegetarians, eh?
Right, this comes from PETA.
Oh, yeah.
Are you surprised? And this is Father John Deere, which is funny, but it's spelled D-E-A-R. And, of course, he's speaking about why Christians should be vegetarians. And, yep, it's from the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals catalog.
All right, we'll be right back.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls. Take a deep breath. Relax.
In God's initial and ideal world, represented in the book of Genesis by the Garden of Eden, there was no suffering, no exploitation, and no violence at all. People and animals were vegetarians, as we read in the first chapter of Genesis. God said, "See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food." Immediately after creating this beautiful, non-violent, non-exploitative world, God describes it as very good. This is the only time in the narrative that God calls creation very good, instead of merely good, and this immediately follows God's command of vegetarianism. But after the fall, people waged war, held one another as slaves, ate meat, and committed every atrocity imaginable. After the flood, when the world's vegetation was destroyed, we are told that God allowed humans to eat meat. Scholars argue that within the context of the story, this was only a temporary permission, based on human violence and sinfulness. God gives us free will, and allows us the freedom to reject God and God's way of nonviolence. But God tried to help us to become less violent by commanding people to observe God's laws. In the Mosaic legal system, then, there are more than 150 laws regarding meat eating. But the vision of Eden is still the ideal and the goal. Indeed, Leviticus strictly prohibits the eating of anything with fat or blood, and many argue that the law of Moses actually forbids the eating of flesh entirely, because it's impossible to get blood totally out of meat. The best example of a vegetarian in the Bible is Daniel, the nonviolent resistor who refuses to defile himself by eating the king's meat. He and three friends actually become much healthier than everyone else through their vegetarian diet. They also become 10 times smarter, and God rewards them with knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom. Throughout the marvelous stories that follow, we hear of someone who remains faithful to God, refuses to worship the emperor's false gods and unjust ways, and practices steadfast nonviolence.
Okay, intermission's over. The show must go on.
So there you have it. According to this priest, Christians should be vegetarians because that was God's plan. in the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear other Christians, they like to talk about this, that even the dinosaurs, even T-Rex was a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, of course is a big problem. Here we have a priest who believes in the Garden of Eden story. Like, all of that stuff actually happened. So, you know, at an evolutionary standpoint, of course, there's no such thing as a vegetarian eagle. And so, therefore, you have to believe, if you're one of those people who believes in the Garden of Eden, that the eagle, there was a bird that was only vegetarian, maybe some sort of hummingbird, I don't know, that only drinks sap from flowers, somehow in about 3,500 years managed to evolve into the eagle that we see today. Because there's no such thing as a vegetarian eagle. For one thing, you know, if they ate berries off the trees, I think they would kind of break the branches off. And they'd be like hopping along the ground trying to eat the berries. But it's like, you know, there's a lot of stuff wrong with this. And I'm thinking this whole recording that we just heard was big enough, so I'm going to make a whole blog entry about it. Because the whole thing is just, you know, patently absurd.
So what exactly did the lions do? Did they try to ram trees?
There would be no big cats. There couldn't be a big cat, because think of the cheetah. Why does the cheetah look the way it does? It has, if it's a,
because
it's a
predator. Because it has to bring down trees. No, maybe because it has to go up trees to get to berries.
That's why. For some reason, it has the giant lung capacity. And the high haunches, so that it can climb trees.
Right, exactly.
And not carry up an entire antelope up a tree.
No, you can't do that because he's vegetarian.
Of course, God could have made antelopes entirely out of vegetation.
maybe antelopes are made of tofu. You know how they like to put
the lion and the lamb lay together. See, it says in the Bible. I don't know if it says in the Bible the lion and the lamb.
Oh.
So if it says the lion in the Bible, in the Garden of Eden, what would the lion look like if it were a vegetarian?
No, you have the explanation. All the prey were made out of tofu.
No, but seriously,
no,
if I can say seriously, Ken Ham says, this is really
Wait,
great.
You said seriously, Ken
I'm
Ham
sorry.
Says?
I'm sorry, but
how's that
he
serious?
Says the reason that they could have been vegetarians was because God knew that Eve would eat the fruit. God knew that man would fall. Therefore, he placed within all the animals the predatory stuff in their DNA. And upon the biting in of the fruit, all of the predatory capabilities expressed themselves in all the animals. That would mean that immediately upon Eve's biting into the apple, suddenly appeared all these microorganisms that exist only on other microorganisms, obviously. Because, you know, suddenly these animals grew. He put the venom pouches, like, in their DNA, and at that moment, zam, like, bang, all mongooses suddenly became immune to venom. And meerkats, you know, and then suddenly scorpions, their tails went zing, and the tails popped on the end of the scorpions, right?
It's magic with DNA.
But, I mean, obviously there's a big problem here, because either man has so much power in his own sin that the magic is in the sin that would make predation and would cause all of these magical things to happen, or God did it, which would make John Deere's whole argument false, because if God intended for us to be predators and part of a predatory world, then we should be predators. And his argument is saying, no, God intended this. Of course, that's silly. If God intended for it, why isn't it happening now? You know, so much for an all-powerful God.
Yeah.
If God didn't intend for the fall of man,
apparently. It happened anyway.
It happened anyway.
We humans are just that good.
No, our sin is powerful.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, we kill gods all the time. I mean, we're really powerful. I mean...
See, that's the... But see, Ken Ham's argument is very clever for his part of Christianity, because he explains why we need DNA at all in the first place. Because in the garden, he had to put in DNA to encode these predatory tendencies in all the animals that became meat eaters and omnivores.
Wow.
But, you know, obviously... They like to use their microevolution argument.
All right. Well, let's go back to vegetarianism.
Well, we were talking about it.
True.
The Christian reason for it. You know, it's asinine. This is like a whole...
I agree with the first syllable.
It's from a 30-minute thing about why Christians should be vegetarians. His whole premise is that we should follow the teachings of nonviolence.
Which brings us once again to my next point.
Good segue.
It's funny how you seem to get to all my points before I do. But indeed, my next point was nonviolence, which is very silly. But as you said, it's a religious argument. There's really, I don't see any way to argue this secularly. Because you have to assume, or an agreeing fashion, because you have to assume that killing a cow is an act of violence, which is absurd. And of course, you get assholes like Peter Singer who say that slaughterhouses are the equivalent of concentration camps.
Yeah, that's an asshole.
Which I can't believe that no one has killed him yet.
Yeah.
Peter Singer. Because he is one of the most repulsive human beings on this planet. And, of course, he's the instigator of the whole greening movement, so that explains that.
I don't know the name. Did he write a book, or what?
Oh, I'm sure he's written plenty of books.
Why is he the instigator of the whole greening movement?
Oh, he's the whole inspiration for the greening movement. Comes mostly from him. Because he says things like, killing animals is like the Holocaust.
Because I was just
incredible
thinking, like,
things
this,
of that nature,
this priest,
the whole animal rights thing.
The priest in the clip says his inspiration comes from Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr.
Whatever.
And the author of Diet for a Small Planet, I think it's called. Do you know which book I'm talking about?
Yeah,
this is like the inspiration for a lot of vegans and vegetarians. This Diet for a Small Planet, but we're still back on violence, so we should stay there. Diet for a Small Planet is about sustainability and crap.
But vegetarianism has nothing to do with nonviolence. If you want to force people not to eat meat, that's violent.
Right. This is the whole, like, Stephen Molyneux kind of thing. They talk about government,
exactly.
And it is about force. And ultimately, if you don't do what it says, it will imprison you or kill you. It's all, you know, we have to send a cop after you with a gun. That's violence.
And of course, do they try to persuade you? No. They use propaganda, like the whole, I'd rather die than wear fur, something like that. I forgot.
You mean lots of naked actresses and stuff?
Their stupid propaganda campaigns, their support eco-terrorism, you know.
Sending people in cow costumes to elementary schools.
Exactly, indoctrinating
the children. Frighten the children.
Yeah. So nonviolence, but another thing is, vegetarianism does kill a lot of animals. This is something you don't hear a lot about.
I love this one.
Vegetarianism indeed kills...
And we're not just talking about the starved children, but...
Millions of animals every year. and the reason for that is that to prepare the land for growing crops. And, of course, the animals in this case are mice, moles, rabbits, and other creatures, also underground creatures.
And lots of bugs. many, 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 many bugs that they don't care about.
And any disruption of land for farms or whatever reduces the amount of land left for other animals, also resulting in the deaths of many. Farm machinery routinely kill, there's no way to have a bloodless farm, is the point here. So,
and that, especially not, especially, organic ones.
Exactly.
Organic farms are not free from cruelty. You still have to prepare the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you, I suppose if you have like a 2-square-foot garden or something, but, I mean, it's like, they have big machines. They still do, even if they don't put poison down.
So the question is, what, the question asked here is, what is it that makes it okay to kill animals of the field so that we can eat vegetables or fruits, but not pigs or chickens or cows? And I would add to that, why is it more wrong to eat the animals that you kill? And somehow it's morally right to kill animals without eating them.
Right.
Because they're vegetarians. They can't eat rabbits or any rodents.
Or bugs.
I don't eat rodents either. But how come it's morally wrong to actually do something with the animals that you kill? And vegetarians are morally superior because the animals they kill aren't used for food.
Because they didn't directly kill them, don't you understand?
Well, neither do I. I don't kill any animal directly.
Right, exactly. We don't. We're not hunters. Not that we're against hunting.
I'm not a hunter. I don't care about.
We're gatherers. We gather at the grocery store.
Yeah, definitely. So that's the only difference. So there's really no difference. Vegetarians are just as killers as meat eaters.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is they don't eat the damn animals. So, how does that make them morally superior? I think that I'm morally superior. Just my opinion. But I mean, if we're going to bicker about who's morally superior, now, I don't think it's a question of morality, but they make it one. So if you're going to start from that premise, then you still lose. You know? And of course, another argument, and this one I actually heard from someone when I was arguing about this, so I thought I would give it here again, which is, oh, but being a vegetarian is part of who I am, so how can you have a problem with that?
Like Christianity.
Well, my answer is no, it's not a part of who you are. It's like being an atheist. It's an adjective. It's not a noun.
Yeah, it's not part of you. It's something it's you're interested in.
It's not an idea. It's a diet, okay? Of course.
Right. That's like saying that Slim Fast is a part of you.
Yeah.
It's who I am. I am a Slim Fast drinker.
But if you're reasonable about it and you don't have this ideology, then it's just a diet. So how can you be part of who you are?
What we're talking about is definitely has a component of you know, a cause to get other people to do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm talking here if it's just a diet. Yeah, if you do have this belief system. But even if you have a belief system, you can get out of it.
Yeah, it is a choice.
I mean, yeah, it's a choice, absolutely. And I think if you'd realize, well, I guess I'm talking to this person, but I don't know who it is anymore. But
so there was a real person that said that?
But I think vegetarians should realize that they do have a choice. Now, perhaps the most persuasive argument is that vegetarianism is natural and vegetarianism is healthy.
Which is pretty easily defeated.
I have a term for the vegetarian diet since they label us Mm-hmm. I have a term, it's FAD. It's flatulent anemic diet. FAD.
Yes.
So there you go, because you know the stereotype of vegetarians always farting and being anemic, which is part of the whole health thing. Vegetarianism is not healthy.
It reminds me of reading up about some of the diets of the turn of the century Seventh-day Adventists who started this sort of health nut, nutrition nut kind of thing, like Kellogg and Graham. A lot of religious, Christian, Protestant religious sects were vegetarians. And there's something about it that, about these kinds of vegetarians, they're completely obsessed with the bowels. And some of these guys, I think they haven't grown out of this total obsession with bowels. Even in the 1950s, my mom and her four sisters and brother were routinely fed, what is it, a laxative every morning. But they're so
That's
obsessed
great.
With the bowels and farting is, it's like the yoga that expresses your farts. You know, have you ever heard of that?
No, I think we should continue.
You don't want me to talk about the bowels, like the whole philosophy behind
it? No, just...
Because if you want to watch, if you watch any late night infomercial, you're going to hear about intestines, bowels, and all of that shit, I guess. No pun intended.
I think we should just continue on the topic here.
But no,
they
say,
want to hear about the
they
bowels.
Claim that meat eaters have gross, infected, bacteria-ridden, pussy bowels because they eat meat.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't proven their case.
Now, I'm not saying that vegetarianism is bad for everyone. Some people definitely thrive on it. But you don't hear about the ones that don't because they drop out. So there is a phenomenon of failure to thrive on vegetarian diets.
And their children.
Oh, children, I think that should be illegal. I think it should be illegal to people.
You think it should be illegal? I thought you were an anarchist.
I'm saying that in the private sense. I think it should not be permitted for parents to force their little children to be vegetarian. It's unconscionable. It's cruel.
Well, especially babies. Because, as you were saying, humans are not meant to be vegetarians.
Throw the fuckers in jail.
Evolutionarily, we're omnivores.
Throw the fuckers in jail. So the symptoms of failure to thrive in vegetarian diets include the following. Not feeling satisfied, being hungry all day because you don't get enough proteins. Poor sex drive, poor quality sleep. Behavioral effects such as not being able to get one's mind off food, which, you know, happens every time you have a diet dysfunction.
It's like called a weight loss diet.
You become fixed on food.
Mm-hmm.
The yo-yo syndrome of not being able to stay on the diet constantly due to cravings. Emotional effects such as non-specific loss of zest. I don't know what that means. Actual deficiencies in some cases.
It makes you lethargic.
Mm-hmm. And I am on this site, by the way, of beyondveg.com, which is a great site. If you want to read about a balanced scientific perspective on vegetarianism from vegetarians, many of which are still vegetarians, but it's
go.
A very balanced scientific perspective. They also explain on here why vegetarianism is not natural in terms of anthropology. In fact, there's a little discussion on their site about how the rise of the change from hunter-gatherer to agricultural has really been detrimental to it was necessary in order to ensure the development of the human race, but it was very detrimental to Homo sapiens. There was a lot more tooth decay because of the reliance on starchy foods. There was a lot more tooth decay, malnutrition, rates of infectious disease increased dramatically over Paleolithic times.
And that's why we have fat people.
In this
poor fat people who couldn't eat meat but could eat a lot of potatoes.
And the skeletal remains show that height decreased by 4 inches from the late Paleolithic to the early Neolithic because of poor nutrition and increased infectious disease. And, of course, partly because of interbreeding, which is, you know, isolation of communities. That's what happens. And there's osteoporosis and anemia started at that period. So we don't know exactly the causes, but let's just give you an idea of what we're talking about here. It's not, I mean, our ancestors ate meat, bugs. Early Homo sapiens ate meat. No, it's not unnatural, is the point here. Mm-hmm.
I suppose people probably have claimed that the early man was actually a vegetarian. We're just assuming because of their teeth that it's this way or that way. I mean, it's the same kind of creationist type argument.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you don't really hear about it, but there is a lot of failure to thrive. There are a lot more ex-vegetarians than there are vegetarians.
Really?
And there's just a failure to thrive in many cases because it's very difficult to get everything you need in a vegetarian diet. Although you can do it on paper. However, if you get on even more extreme positions like veganism, fruitarianism, juice, whatever you call the
juicing
juice people, then it becomes outright impossible. You have to keep eating, keep eating, keep eating all day. You become fixated on food. You know,
weighing and measuring. It's the same thing with weight loss.
You know,
diets.
I'm not fixated on food. You know, we have really good meals.
We're not fixated, but food and eating is in our values.
It's very enjoyable. And it's necessary, but it's very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
We don't buy organic foods. We don't buy vegetarian stuff. You'll never catch us with tofu.
I don't mind tofu that much, but you don't like it, so I don't bother with it. It doesn't bother me. It's like, I don't want to buy food because it's like an activist food, you know. I've never gone to Trader Joe's, not that I wouldn't, but I don't want to buy food because they're going to give money to this or that organization to promote.
Exactly. Well, we're getting really close to the end of the show, but I just wanted to say, you know, being to any vegetarians out there, you know, you don't have to be a vegetarian. You can try some meat once in a while. It's just food. Stop obsessing over it, you know?
You know, I...
That's just, you know, enjoy your damn life.
I tried to be... I tried to be against red meat when I got out of college for just like a couple of months. I thought, oh, you know, McDonald's grows grains and stuff and I shouldn't.
Why don't you go ahead and give our
Yeah. But of course I've become an ex red meat because the whole thing is ridiculous. Anyway, again, you can visit our website at hellboundalley.com and our email address is allie@hellboundalley.com.
Is it now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, if you've been trying to contact me, I've changed my email address. I'm at Videotron, videotron.ca. And our next show will be How to Argue Morality Part 2 with Stéphane Molyneux. And hopefully this time we will talk about the moral arguments. We didn't last time. Or double your money back. So goodbye, everyone.
See you next week, and bon appétit!